China is exploring the Arctic, researching climate change and pledging to build a polar Silk Road linking Asia and Europe.
说中国投资给当地人民带来美好的生活，当地人民为什么拒绝？
But Chinese investment is causing controversy.
They said, I want to give the land to Chinese and this is not good. I said, it's my right to do whatever I want.
Some are suspicious of the superpowers' motives.
So there's certainly lots of concern that those research stations are dual use for military and other purposes, intelligence gathering purposes.
As the polar region heats up, 101 East investigates China's plans for the Arctic. It all starts here in Shanghai, far from the Arctic. The coastal megacity in eastern China is under threat as polar ice caps continue to melt. Floods often hit the Chinese economic capital. As the climate crisis worsens, Beijing says it has a duty to invest in the Arctic, a stance echoed by Gui Chongyou, China's former ambassador to Sweden.
北极的气候变化，气候升温，并且融化，不仅影响到中国的气候变化，而且直接影响到中国的农业、渔业、牧业、生产。所以呢，中国积极参与北极气候变化治理。China
has to tread carefully in the Arctic, a place where superpowers converge. Russia dominates half the region, the United States has Alaska, and their North American ally Canada has three territories. And then there's Europe, including Greenland, a Danish territory, and Norway. According to Mark Langtain of the University of Tromsø, China has adopted a cautious approach to avoid upsetting the Arctic superpowers.
China based a lot of its early Arctic policy on the need to develop scientific cooperation. So I would say scientific diplomacy was very much a first step in a lot of China's Arctic diplomatic engagement.
To establish its scientific legitimacy, China first had to explore the polar regions in the field. 30 years ago, they equipped themselves with an icebreaker. A Ukrainian cargo ship was converted into a research vessel and given a new name. Shuelong, the Snow Dragon. Sun Kai, a Chinese professor of Arctic geopolitics, recalls the ship's launch.
Before the Shuelong goes to scientific expeditions, they also have a kind of ceremony for the start.
China turned every appearance of the Shuelong into a public event.
This is maybe also part of the awareness building for the Chinese public to have some awareness, not only the Arctic, but the kind of research or the maritime awareness.
With this icebreaker, China has access to a new world. But the floating laboratory is not enough to serve China's aspirations in the Arctic. Guo Peiqing from the Institute of Polar Law and Policy explains the dilemma.
中国刚才提到，中国在北极的利益有一个是科学利益。那么中国在北极没有领土，那么中国在北极想找一个落脚点，开展北极科学考察。But
how could China access land in the Arctic, a region whose residents fiercely guard their sovereignty? This archipelago, which for many centuries was a whale hunting haven, opens the Arctic up for the Chinese, thanks to a forgotten treaty which resurfaced in 1991. Svalbard became a Norwegian territory a century ago, on the condition that signatory countries were allowed access to engage in commercial or industrial activities. When it was ratified in 1925, France was wary of American ambitions and invited other ally countries to also ratify the treaty. China was one of them.
在这个问题上，我想中国或许可以感谢法国，法国为中国的。 1925年提供了这个机会。
Thanks to this treaty, China was finally able to build a base in the Arctic, the Yellow River Station, which was launched in 2004. While China is taking baby steps in its Arctic scientific endeavors, it's also looking for alternative shipping trade routes.
再说中国自己每年进口的原油的60%，中国每年对外贸易的80%都是经过南海的。如果南海没有航行自由，那中国自己对外贸易，进口石油，对外贸易就没法开展了。
The route linking Asia and Europe currently goes through the South China Sea, which is a tense region, and the Suez Canal, which can potentially get blocked.The Arctic's melting ice caps could offer Beijing alternatives and shorten the journey by up to 20 days. The Northern Sea Route is the most promising, tracking along the Russian coast and past Hyrcanus, Asia's closest European port. It's here that Felix Tschudi, a Norwegian shipowner, is the first to prove to the Chinese.That this northern route between east and west is viable.
In the 14th of September 2010, the Nordic Barents left with 41,500 tons of iron ore concentrate to China and arrived 22 and a half days later, which showed that, you know, the Northern Sea Route was open for non-Russian vessels with non-Russian cargoes between non-Russian ports. So that was sort of a first.And that was quite important because it showed people this is possible.
It's not just Arctic entrepreneurs who are hoping to cash in on the new relationship with China. Chinese businessmen are also on a quest for Arctic territories. Like billionaire Huang Yubo. He spent 10 years working for China's Central Propaganda Department before becoming a real estate tycoon.In the early 2010s, he set his sights on two Nordic territories. Norwegian entrepreneur Ola Gieva was introduced to Huang after a dinner with China's ambassador in Oslo.
And he came here and he said, do you have a property? I said, I have many properties here. And he said, can I see it? Yes, we can. But then we need a boat to see it from the fjord. We jump in a boat and we go for a nice trip in the fjord. And he see the property. And then he said, is it possible to buy? Yes, I said, why not? After 5 minutes, he said, how much do you want? I said, I don't really know. It's a big property. It's 1 million square meters. Depends what you want to do.He said he liked to build a resort, 5-star resort. Very high class.
Gieva and two of his associates went to China for 2 weeks at Huang's expense.
Her har vi, her,
ja, der, ja.
Hadde jo underskrevet en intensjonsavtale som vi lagde kveld.
Ja, det gjorde vi, ja. Ja, ja, ja.
Vi skrev alle med etter...
The agreement draws widespread press coverage in Norway, and Gieva is reportedly called a traitor to his country on social media. Huang backs off, and the contract is put on standby.
Many people, they talk very badly to me and said, you know, I want to give the land to Chinese, and this is not good. I said, it's my right to do whatever I want. And I think in the end, it will be a nice investmentand good for Lyngen, good for Norway, and I cannot see the problem.
The outcry against the Chinese billionaire in Norway was preceded by a similar controversy in Iceland. Ogmundur Jonasson was Iceland's interior minister at the time.
It's a question of how you look at a superpower, a military superpower, an authoritarian state, a billionaire coming from that state? Of course you ask about these connections. Of course you do.
The controversial proposal involved an even larger parcel of land. Huang had tried to buy 300 square kilometres of frozen wilderness in the north of the island, saying he planned to build a tourist resort with support from Icelandic entrepreneur Halldór Johansson and his colleagues.
There were some very strange news that surfaced. One, for example, was about him wanting to import a lot of Chinese, up to 3,000 Chinese people, to live in Grímsstaðir. And even it surfaced in the Canadian media that it would be some sort of a military base for China.
Iceland's then president, Olafur Ragnar Grímsson, thought the controversy was overblown.
It's all utter nonsense. I mean, it's a media hype which fits the kind of model the Chinese are coming. The Chinese are coming to sort of scare people.
The interior minister ended up intervening to stop the project in disagreement with the president.
We must remember this, that people were crying for investment, hoping for investment. But I wanted to be realistic. Internationally, geopolitically, things are happening. The world is on the move. And of course, we have to analyze this and try to understand it.
But in this small country of 360,000 people, Chinese investment is on the rise. Closer ties develop between Iceland and China after the 2008 global financial crisis, which brought Iceland to its knees.
Faced with that situation, direct hostility from Europe, complete no interest from the United States. I wrote a letter to the president of China, and that evolved to a currency swap agreement between Iceland and China and some other measures, which was important for us to remind Brussels and the European powers that Iceland had other options. And there were no conditions put by the Chinese.
This alliance is sealed when Iceland becomes the first European country to sign a free trade agreement with China. But it's in Kiruna, Sweden, that Beijing makes a great stride forward. In 2013, China is accepted as an observer within the Arctic Council. This is an informal club led by the eight Arctic countries, which aims to promote cooperation amongst the states and address environmental and development issues. China's former ambassador to Iceland, Jin Jiejin, says the government was grateful for Iceland's help.
China became the accredited observer in the year 2013. And we got support by quite a number of countries, including Iceland, which we quite appreciate.
China has grown to the point where we simply can't close it out of the Arctic. And that if China is denied some kind of role in the Arctic Council, it will simply treat that as a roadblock to be rooted around.
But members like Russia and the US had reservations about granting China observer status.
At that time, I noticed there are some suspicion about what does China want in the Arctic? And also the Chinese are coming, this kind of China threat mentality.
I'm pleased to be joined at the table by our senior Arctic official, Julie Gourlay.
For 15 years, Julie Gourlay was the United States diplomatic representative at the Arctic Council meetings. She explains how the US came to accept China into the forum.
It's better to have China under the tent with all of us than not. One of the big fears was that if China were denied observer status, they would maybe seek revenge in some ways, like cause trouble for us in other forums like the UN.
China, as a permanent member of the UN Security Council, we do have our obligations and responsibilities to contribute our wisdom, our resources and know-how.
In This symbolic victory happens just after Xi Jinping becomes president of China and changes the world stage. With his climate speeches and his vision for the new Silk Roads, Xi Jinping heralds a new direction for China's Arctic ambitions.
Political level interest in the Arctic has really gone way, way up since President Xi took power.
After the global financial crisis, a new development unexpectedly plays into Beijing's hands. Russia's annexation of Crimea in early 2014. The international community turns against Moscow. Sanctions are imposed. The main goal is to isolate Russia. Boris Anosov from the Russian Academy of Sciences says this changed Russia's perspective on China.
До Криму, когда речь еще шла про возможность активного сотрудничества с Западом, конечно, Китай был не на первых полосах.
In this new post-sanctioned world, Vladimir Putin welcomes Xi Jinping with honor. Russia needs money and technology, while China needs natural resources in order to sustain its growth. The Yamal Peninsula in the Russian Arctic changes everything. The largest liquid gas site in the world is crucial to Russia, while also giving China a firm foothold in the high north, with Chinese companies acquiring 30% of the Yamal project.
俄罗斯亚马尔天然气开发项目，这是一个互利共赢的合作项目。
It's not the only project in China's sights. In late 2017, Xi Jinping welcomes then-US President Donald Trump to Beijing with great pomp and ceremony. The Yamal site may be large, but it's only half the cost of what's brewing in the American Arctic. China signs a $43 billion mega contract for a liquid gas project in Alaska, the US's only Arctic state. Its governor, Bill Walker, had gone to plead the case to Trump.
He asked, what could he do? And I said, we need some help with the market. And about 2 weeks later, I got a notification in my office that President Xi wanted to meet with me. We want cheap, clean energy, and so does China. And so we can offer, you know, potentially 100 years of supply of natural gas. Our market is Asia, because we're just much closer to Asia, and what we have, they need.
25 years after buying a used icebreaker from Ukraine, Beijing now had the capacity to build its own, the Shuelong 2. Plans for the construction of a nuclear icebreaker are also in the works. Then in January 2018, Beijing presents a white paper on its Arctic policy to the international press. Beyond climate issues, it details its Polar Silk Road project and asserts its wish to exploit Arctic resources. Beyond Iceland and Norway, China's ambitions also extended to Sweden. Tommy Niklasson, a consultant in the small town of Lusasul on the country's west coast, recalls the day he met a Chinese investor.
He was a small Chinese guy. He could invest for 50 million euro, and he had his daughter with him, and then an assistant. We showed them the Primraff outside Lusasil. When they saw that place, then they, wow, will it be possible for us to look into, to make a pre-study, if it's possible to create some like a deep port here for container traffic?
I heard some rumors from friends or locals here.
Former Navy officer Magnus Sjöderholm believed Sweden was being naive about the port project.
I found it very surprising with his plans. But anyways, I started to check things and dig a little bit in my sources. I got to know who were behind this. So we located two big Chinese companies, both with links to the Communist Party.
Sjöderholm, who suspected that the deep water port could serve Chinese military interests, wrote an opinion piece that was published in a number of newspapers. The Chinese embassy says the reports caught them by surprise. Even so, Swedish Defence Minister Peter Hultqvist was wary of the deal's potential dangers.
We have no interests, foreign investments that we not can also control in the long run. We have also seen, for example, in Greece, where there is Chinese ownership of a harbour, that also have been used to make an impact on Greece policy development. So we do not want that sort of situation in our country.
China pulled out of the Swedish port proposal. Meanwhile, China's scientific projects in the Arctic have also come under suspicion.
China has a research station in Svalbard. It has a brand new one in Iceland. And, of course, it uses its icebreaker, the Xuelong, as a scientific research platform in the Arctic. So there's certainly lots of concern that those research stations are dual use for military and other purposes, intelligence gathering purposes.
At the Arctic Council in Finland in May 2019, these suspicions were on full display when Mike Pompeo, then US Secretary of State, took the stage.
Beijing claims to be a near Arctic state, yet the shortest distance between China and the Arctic is 900 miles. There are only Arctic states and not Arctic states. No third category exists, and claiming otherwise entitles China to exactly nothing.
It was a very, very aggressive speech that had never been given before in an Arctic Council setting. There had never been anything like that.
Our Pentagon warned just last week that China could use its civilian research presence in the Arctic to strengthen its military presence, including deployment of submarines to the region as a deterrent against nuclear attack.
After Mike Pompeo's speech, China retreated from the giant $43 billion Alaska gas project, but has continued investing elsewhere in the Arctic.
The biggest question about the future of the Arctic in the next 30 years is not what China will do and what Russia will do, because we know they will continue to cooperate in energy and resources and shipping. The big question is, what will the United States do? Will they continue to be largely passive?
It could certainly be a game changer. If China were able to have a lot of presence in the Arctic and establish the ability to engage in lots of economic development activity, it would be felt around the world.